Welcome to Dreaming the Light. I'm Joanna, your guide on this transformative dream journey. In this podcast, we will explore the world of dreams, sleep, and rest, uncovering their remarkable healing potential, even in the most challenging times. Discover practical tools to navigate nightmares, anxiety, and trauma-related sleep issues, as we embark together on a quest to unlock the healing power of your dreams.
Hello, everyone. Today I'm speaking with Alicia Fins. She is a psychologist and sleep coach. And I would like to talk to her today about all the reasons that we are experiencing sleep disturbances and how to deal with them, and how important it is to understand that our sleep hygiene, our sleep patterns, our sleep wellness starts way before we go to sleep every night. So welcome, Alicia. It's really a pleasure to have you here. And I would like to start by asking you, could you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and why did you find this path to becoming a sleep coach? What motivates you to get interested in sleep?
Okay. So first of all, let me thank you for inviting me to this interview, to your space, and to your project. Yes, it's again pleasure to be here amongst those all people that you have been interviewing, experts in the area of sleep, dreaming, nightmares, yoga nidra. So yes, it's my privilege to be here. So to answer your question, so my journey to become a sleep coach, it's a story of two paths that I was going along a few years ago, paths that were separate, but they met at some point, kind of married, yes, and after some time, they created a new way that I have been going along since that time. So the first path, it was my personal struggles with my own sleep. Mainly it was due to the work I was doing, very high-paced work, dealing with quite complex issues, often till late in the evening, yes, and that caused me like suddenly waking up in the middle of the night, then having difficulties to go back to sleep. And obviously that impacted my functioning because it was just functioning for some time during the day. And I was desperate at that time for help. So I approached somebody who offered counseling. However, I discovered they were unable to address my sleep difficulties at that time. But I was still hopeful and I took it upon myself. I took responsibility for finding my own ways to help myself. And then that was the time when I started being interested in sleep and the ways that I could help myself. And I found specific strategies that actually were helpful to me. And luckily, I overcame my difficulties. But my second path that I was going through, it was my need for further professional development or career change. Yes. And at that time, I reached for support from a professional coach, which I am really grateful for. And we explored areas that I could develop in. And it was at the same time when I was kind of overcoming my sleep difficulties, when I started becoming interested in sleep, such a complex, but for this reason, fascinating subject. Yes. And it came quite naturally that I wanted to proceed with my further career in that area. And I believe that my own hardships, yes, my own experiences became my strengths, actually. They facilitated me, or equipped me rather, with that understanding of my clients' empathy that I hopefully I've got for them. Yes. And that was all topped up with knowledge that I gained through studying for a few years. So yes, so since then I have been helping people to sleep better, and also like filling the gap in the market that, you know, at that time I experienced, because at that time a few years ago it was not enough, I believe, support for, especially for adults who struggled with sleep. There was more support for parents of children who had difficulties with sleep, but not as much for adults.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And yeah, before I met you, I myself haven't heard about sleep coach really, you know, and it's very interesting that, as you say, that there is a really, obviously there is a really big niche and this very important struggle that we have nowadays with this super fast paced lives that we are living and so many distractions and all the things that we could list here that we do wrong. And as a result, we don't get proper sleep. But as you said, because you couldn't find the help that you needed, so you start to investigate yourself, and then you decided, hey, so I managed it, this and that helped me, so let's study it and let's help others. And I think this is a very beautiful way of, as you said, maybe changing a career a little bit, or as bringing something to the world, because when something comes from your own experience, there is certain quality to it that it's really different. I believe that someone who, as you say, struggled with sleep, there is this compassion, there is this understanding that someone like, I never personally struggled. Of course, I had occasional, you know, problems with sleep, but I never struggled with insomnia or any sleep disturbances. So it's completely different of the level of understanding that you can give to people, that because you've been there, right? You've been there, so you really feel them. And those both paths that merge together, both from your personal experience and from what you learned when you were studying to become a sleep coach. What did you find? What are the main reasons that people can't sleep?
So in my work with clients, going to the roots, yes, or to causes, because it's usually not just one cause, but causes that impact each other, is at the heart of my work with clients. And I believe this is the most effective way with helping people. So yeah, so I sometimes feel like I am like a detective, yes, trying to find out what's beneath. So I usually go to, like, I've got a few categories of those root causes. And first of them is related to our level of arousal, yes, so of activation of our whole body, but it includes activation of our nervous system, of our hormonal system, cardiovascular, and so on and so on. And the prime cause, root cause for this is our stress, yes, how we experience of stress, how we deal with this. We know that can arouse our body and our mind a lot. Yes, for example, it's production of cortisol, adrenaline at that time. Again, they are important, cortisol, to activate us in the morning. But obviously, when it lasts throughout the day, it obviously can disturb our sleep. So it's our, in general, is our arousal level, one category of root causes. Yes. Another category is related to our circadian rhythm, our internal body clock, which we've got in each cell of our body, but the master body clock is in our brain. And this can be often disrupted by, for example, by shift working. But also at this point, I wanted to appreciate all people who serve us, you know, working at night, without whom we wouldn't be able to maybe function as a community. Yes, but yes, maybe shift working, but also like traveling across time zones, so jet lag, But also lifestyle choices can impact our body clock. Yes. So it would be like a bit erratic sleep schedules, or maybe not being exposed enough to natural light. Light is, I often call light as the kind of executive director. Yes. Mm. It impacts whilst our master body clock in our brain is like manager, but it obviously it is governed by that executive director, natural light. Yes, but yes, no exposure to natural light, it will be important. Or if we expose ourselves, for example, to light, maybe artificial light from our electronic devices at night. Yes, but yes, so exposure to light, but also the content of what we are doing. Yes, it can impact our body clock. Also, it will impact mentioned before arousal level, because they are very closely related. Another category of kind of root causes is our appetite, drive to sleep. Yes. Mm-hmm. So we need to feel tired. We need to feel sleepy in order to sleep. Yes. And that appetite to sleep grows within hours of us being awake. Yes. So the more we are, the longer we are being mm-hmm. awake, we feel more sleepy. But it doesn't mean all the same. I don't understand this the same as being exhausted. Yes. So yes, it's important that we feel sleepy, but we can interfere with this by, for example, intaking too much caffeine. But also, I'm not against caffeine. Yes, but you know, if it and when and how it's being taken, napping. I love napping, but again, if we do not follow certain rules around that, we can interfere with our kind of drive, appetite to sleep. And another group of maybe root causes, they are, which I often look at, is our health conditions. Yes. Mm. So it would be, for example, it would be obstructive sleep apnea. And also there are lots of related to that to this conditions, like cardiovascular problems, higher level of blood pressure, also obesity, inflammations in our bodies, pains. And yeah, so in general, I look at, yes, physical, our not just physical, but health condition, and also medication that we take for them, they can interfere with our sleep. Yeah, so it's very important to, in my work, is to look at those and what is that root cause, and then tailoring strategies,
mm-hmm.
you know, accordingly to what is at the bottom, beneath the surface.
Yes.
Because there are loads of strategies, and we can obviously read about them on the internet, on different forums. Yes, but if they are not tailored to mm-hmm. your root causes, they can actually, like, I believe they can make more harm. Again, they can fuel our wakefulness, yes, our sleep difficulties, rather than helping us. So yes, addressing root causes when we apply certain strategies to our individual circumstances.
Yeah, I think what you said, it makes a lot of sense, because if someone cannot sleep because of some physical conditions they have or the medicines they take, it would be probably different ways of dealing with it than someone who, for example, is just under a lot of stress. Mm-hmm. So if the root cause is mainly the stress, right? If, let's say, the circumstances are not ideal and you are experiencing a lot of stress and the stress is not going away, it wasn't one-time stress, maybe it's something that continues for several weeks, for example, what advice would you give to people that are finding themselves in very stressful circumstances. There is anxiety, and suddenly, you know, they never had a problem with sleeping, and suddenly they can't sleep because I believe, you know, a lot of thoughts when we go to sleep, a lot of fear from coming from different ways. So what could be some strategies? Obviously, different things that work for different people. I understand there, you know, we're just talking about possible things people could do, because as you said, there's checking a lot of things and making like a deeper analysis. But some things that you could say that could bring some relief, maybe some things that brought you relief when you are struggling also with your own sleep problems.
So, yes, most people that are in crisis or they experience trauma. So trauma is, I understand as our bodies and our minds, like emotional and physiological response to a very distressful event or series of events. Yes, so they will have difficulties with sleep, like problems with sleep is the hallmark of people who with post-traumatic stress disorder. Yes, 9 out of 10 people, yes, will have sleep problems. But luckily, I think, well, luckily, there are a lot of things that we can do in that situation. I would like to kind of stress that it is important that we do not hurry up with anything. Yes. Okay. So that we allow ourselves time and space to process. Yes. To process our emotions at the moment, like you said, of crisis, our body is in constant alert mode. Yes. Yeah. It's looking for a threat in order to protect us. So we lose that kind of balance that we need. So in order to go back to that balance, yes, we need to give ourselves time by looking at our emotions. Okay, so what am I feeling? So being like an observer, yes, what am I feeling? And but if that's difficult in terms of emotions, you can go a little bit, maybe sometimes it is easier for people to start observing your body. Yes, to checking in with your breathing, with your heart rate, with tensions in your muscles. Yes, how my head is feeling, my face, my shoulders, my stomach, etc., etc. And being with that for a moment. So it's that creating a better relationship with and better understanding of yourself. If it's needed, if it's even needed in a really crisis situations, you can, you can kind of go and lie down and, you know, curl like a baby, because yes, in those times you are very vulnerable, like a little child, and treat yourself like you maybe, hopefully you would treat like a child, yes, because you need that level of safety, that, you know, to in the future to get better. If needed, again, you can wrap yourself in a like a blanket, you can rock, you know, rocking is quite good. So anything that is quite rhythmic and repetitive. I've started rocking. Yes, it's quite calming for lower parts of our brain that, you know, that are responsible for that physical at the moment survival, because we are in survival mode. Yes. So rocking is really useful. Hugging yourself. Yes. If you can. So you give also, if you feel very dysregulated, you give yourself physical boundaries, okay, that you might feel that you don't have at that moment. What also you can do after building that relationship with yourself, this is the first step to going and looking for support or relationship, within relationships with other people. When we are in trauma, often, you know, relationships can suffer with other people. We're not in that kind of on that level. Yeah. But if you hopefully if you've got better relationship with yourself, better understanding, then you can reach for support from other people. And what research says and surveys that I read, relationships with other people, it's the second factor that adds to our sense of happiness in life after sleep. Yes. But at that moment you may not sleep, yes, really well, right. But you can reach for other people's support and allow them again to, if you've got those people and you can tolerate, hug you, yes, give you that, we I call it physical containment, yes, so contain you, to offer you those boundaries that can be again like you would offer to the child, yes. And then you will be releasing those levels of cortisol, your muscle tension, and so on and so on. But if you don't have people, sometimes, yes, we may not have people around us. So it would be useful to build a connection with the nature. Yes, mm-hmm. If you can, even hugging a tree sometimes can be very helpful. That's something that I personally like doing, or stroking an animal that you might have. Yes, but definitely it will require time. But coming again to, if you've got people around you, they again might be able to offer you emotional containment. Yes, so if you talk to them and they listen empathically, if they are in tune with you, then after talking to them, you might feel, and hopefully they won't be taking your struggles on their shoulders. Yes, they won't feel overwhelmed themselves, but it can create some space in your brain, yes, to think about, you know, your current situation. Because when we are in trauma, often we don't have, like I said, we operate from our lower parts of brain, and we don't have much access, or the access is limited to our higher part, the highest part of brain, frontal cortex, which is responsible for reasoning, for reflection. Another thing so that you could do is, again, like breathing exercises, mm-hmm. or not even exercises, but different breathing kind of techniques. We know that longer exhalation than inhalation can activate our parasympathetic nervous system, responsible for that, for feeling calm. And so we are again working on that balance. We want that balance to, yes, to be back. But also something that I particularly like, coherent breathing. So, and coherent breathing is when you've got the same amount of time you spend on breath in and breath out. Okay, and they usually together, one cycle lasts about 12 seconds, and within 1 minute we will have about 5 cycles of inhalation and exhalation. Yes, so it can be very, again, very helpful. But if you struggle with that, you can add movement of your arms to this. And that sometimes is, again, more helpful to people who are caught in those kind of strong emotions. So if they do something with their arms, hands, so that might be helpful. And also I like the strategy, but that would be strategy shortly before we go to bed. Mm-hmm. A strategy called the cycle of protectors. Yes, the cycle of protectors that I learned not that long ago, actually. And it's an ancient strategy. I believe it has got roots in Tibet. And it refers to the strategy when you go to bed, you close your eyes and you imagine four protectors or four kind of figures that you feel safe around in each corner of your bed. Yes. So those figures or even objects, they could be life, not life. It could be real, unreal, but it's, yes, it's important what emotions you've got towards them and they've got towards you. And when you imagined those, then you can fulfill the gaps between them with other kind of smaller figures, objects that will create a circle, safe circle around you. And hopefully then in that way, you will be able to fall asleep a little bit more peacefully and then hopefully wake up more refreshed on the next day.
Yes, thank you for sharing all this amazing ideas. So we had basically how I would describe it in one sentence. It's a lot about just regulating our nervous system way before we go to bed, right? So not to wait till you are in bed and you're just looking at the clock and minutes passing without being able to calm down. It's about taking action during the day, as you said, to do things that can help you regulate your emotion, your nervous system, such as reaching out for support to your family, friends, or community, speak up your feelings, right? And then you mentioned breathing techniques that you can practice, you know, also throughout the day. Nature, amazing, something that I personally also super recommend. You mentioned hugging the trees. I would also say just walking barefoot if you can. If you have a piece of, you know, grass, maybe pavement's not so nice if you live in the city, but if you have a piece of grass, or for me, watching clouds or watching a sunset. It's so calming experience and creates this connection with something beyond us and kind of takes you from the mind, right? From all this, like all these thoughts, all this me, what's happening to me, to focus your energy, your eyes, your heart on something out there. And it's, you know, there's tons of books written about how connecting with nature helps you to calm down and connect with yourself. But not to wait till you go to sleep, because as you said, it's like if we are in this state of this distress, this very high distress, and we are not doing anything to manage it, we're not taking any action, we're not talking to therapists or not going on nature, or I think you didn't mention, but probably also physical activity to discharge. Mm-hmm. Maybe there are specific things that are better. Are there any activities that you would say can help more?
That would be more specific for each individual. Yes,
right.
But anything, like you said, for example, walking, because again, this is quite rhythmic.
Repetitive.
Yes.
I get now what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's quite regulating. It could be horse riding is very regulating. And I had people who told me that, yes, that they are going for horse riding for, you know, for this reason, that they want to, obviously, to be able to manage their stress better. But sometimes when you are in very traumatic or in trauma, sometimes it's difficult to do this. Yes. So if you start with little things like I mentioned, like even swaying from side to side, if you need to like shake or tremble, do it. Yes. Stretching can help. So yoga, for example, yes, can help as well. Start with a little step. Yes. Don't overload again yourself with too many strategies. Too many does not mean that it is better. Yes.
Yes, I understand. Yeah, I think it's very important, because we can fall into this another trap of feeling like maybe we're not doing enough, or as you said at the beginning of our conversation about the understanding that it needs time and that you know, it may take time that we will be able to go back to sleep the way that we are used to, especially if something really traumatic happened to us, and to start small, taking small steps, like you said, like just maybe even rocking or cuddling with the blanket or with our pet. I also find myself very often like regulating just by petting my cat or my dog. Mm. It's again, takes you out of the mind. I think this is the thing. And there is some magic happening there that I can't explain, but it's very, very soothing. And then you mentioned the part of what to do when actually you're in bed. And I spoke with some other experts on sleep, on dreaming, on nightmares. And there are many ways of doing what you just described, of imagining our protectors or imagining ourselves surrounded by a ball of a protecting light, or imagining that our room is, you know, surrounded by like by a wall that cannot be penetrated, that we are safe. And it's this imagination, this our part of like imagination, that can help us also to soothe ourselves, to feel a bit safer, right? Like getting into this place of, okay, I did what I could during the day, and now I can also do something small to add to this sleep protocol, or I don't know how to really call it. What else would you recommend? Do you have anything specific that you personally really like, that, or you with working with clients that really help them? I don't know, some people like to spray like a lavender. I love also smell of lavender, so sometimes I do that. So any other tips of what to do in your bedroom, how to set it up for like a better sleep?
Mm-hmm. So it's important for me personally, and also from the perspective of that body clock, again, that it is dark. Yes, it is dark, although some people might not feel safe in very dark environments. So then having maybe smaller light, and if that light can be maybe more of a orange, red color, and maybe as lower as possible, yes, to imitate the sound that is going down. Yes, so that might be helpful. But for me, would be darkness, and definitely the room that is, like you said, very well ventilated and quite rather on the cool side than, you know, the warmer side, because when we feel quite anxious, so again, we produce more cortisol, higher blood pressure, so our core body temperature
is rising, right?
Yes, rising. Yeah. But for sleep, okay, during sleep, what happens during sleep, naturally, okay, if we feel safe, our core body temperature is supposed to go down slightly. So again, so when you feel anxious, you might feel much kind of warmer and hotter. Yes.
Yeah, I must say that I recently realized that, and it was something that I haven't thought about, that when I feel really distressed, I suddenly feel like I'm getting a fever, but it's not really a fever, but I started to feel hot. And then I say, like, do my thoughts make me hot? Do my thoughts make my head hot? There was something really strange. And I even shared it with my husband, my boyfriend. I said, like, listen, I feel like I'm hot inside. And then before you said what you just said, I think I heard someone or read somewhere that we, and it makes sense, you know, we produce energy within us, even without going into the details of the physiology, that the energy is being produced and it makes us feel hotter. And I was like, ah, that's the thing. I'm not getting sick. I don't have a flu, you know, I'm just inflicting this on myself. So the part of trying to keep cool, it's, I think, yeah, cooler room, very important.
Good observation of yourself.
Yeah, I was so curious because it happened to me like, one day I felt like this, and like, because we're going through something really complicated right now. And I was like, oh, I think I'm getting sick, I think. And then the next day I didn't have it. And then after 2 days, maybe I get for like this heat. And I'm like, what's going on? I thought maybe I'm having COVID, but I was like, no, it's not that. And then somewhere again, I heard it or I saw it, and now you're mentioning it, and it makes complete sense to that this is what's happening. Like our temperature rises a little bit. Maybe it's not that much for everyone to notice, but yeah.
But even slight fluctuation, it can make a difference. Yes. So again, yes, remembering about, or, you know, like cooling down a little bit of our environment. So having bed sheets, yes, made of natural fabrics, cotton, for example, it will help to circulate the temperature a little bit better. Pajamas, if you wear, again, made of natural fabric. Yeah, so things like that. Yeah.
Thank you. That's very, very useful. And I wanted to ask you about the quality versus quantity of sleep? Because I think there's so many opinions about that out there, and people think that the more they sleep, the more rested they are. And I think it can be also psychologically damaging a little bit, in a way that, oh, if I didn't get this 8 hours. So, you know, like when we set ourselves up for failure or for a bad day because we didn't sleep this number of hours that we believe we must sleep in order to have a good day or function properly. Because realistically, let's say if someone is going through a very hard time, maybe even with all the things they're trying to do, they still not be able to get this 8 hours of sleep or seven or how many they think they need. So is there something about our beliefs in this area that also can help us to not to fall into this trap of...
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yes. So the popular phrase that we supposed to sleep between seven and 9 hours suggests that it is the prescription for ideal rest for everybody. Yes, but it's not only, like you said, the duration of the sleep, how many hours, which I wouldn't suggest maybe less than six. However, obviously, but for different reasons, but the quality, like you said, is important. But what we mean by quality, because we're quality, yes, but when we sleep, we go through sleep cycles. Yes. So sleep, in my opinion, it's not a state, it's activity. Yes. Mm-hmm. We go a lot through. So yes, we go through cycles with two main types of sleeps, REM, the most well-known, and when we've got vivid dreams, or the most vivid dreams, and also everything that is not REM, it is called non-REM, yes? Non-REM, and that non-REM is divided into, most often they say, three stages. And during this types, different types of sleeps, and also stages of sleep, we go through again changes in our body, but also those types of sleep or stages of sleep, they've got their functions. Yes. So like REM sleep, it serves our memory consolidation and processing with emotions. Yes. Our non-REM stage three, so slow wave sleep, is mostly responsible for physical restoration. This is the time when we produce the most of our growth hormone. Yes. So for that reparation of cells. So it is important that we, for quality of sleep, that we go through those stages in quite well, kind of balanced, organized manner. Mm-hmm. Yes, we need to be exposed, we need to experience all of them to get those benefits of sleep. But also in terms of quantity, we need time to go through those to go through those cycles. Yes, but that time again will depend on, for example, on people's age. Yes, children need much more sleep than adults, but even teenagers, they still need at least 9 hours of sleep because of how much they are going through at that time of their life, especially in terms of their emotions. Yes, so they will need not to cut, especially on the second part of their sleep related to emotions. Then depending on personal's level of physical but also mental activity, you know, so they will need a little bit more time to process and restore mentally, physically, depending on our level of or our sleep conditions. Yes, again, we will need different maybe amount of sleep. So yes, the amount of sleep is important, but the quality of sleep, which you will be able to assess yourself when you wake up, how groggy, for example, you feel, how much level of energy you've got, depending on, you will be able to assess looking at your level of focus, productivity. Yes. So yes, there will be markers of your, and how you deal with daily events. Yes. And the emotions related to them. So yes, they will be markers of the quality of your sleep.
Yeah, that's a very good point, as you said, because in order to go through a certain amount of the cycles, the 90-minute cycles, right, we need to actually give it a time, because in each cycle, we may have longer periods of non-REM versus REM, right? So as you said, like for processing emotions, for dreaming, which we know it's very important for emotional processing, if we cut the last 2 hours of our sleep, we won't go into this deep dreaming state, and it has consequences, right? So uninterrupt, or like the ability of having at least, they say, I think at least a fourth of those 90-minute cycles, it's very important. That's what I heard somewhere the other day. And yeah, and you can you can see yourself if you feel rested and if you feel like your best self in the morning. But again, mentioning that it's very personal in a way that the beliefs that we have about our sleep, I feel it's so important to highlight it, that no, it's not always the fact that you didn't sleep this amount of hours that you usually do or you believe you need. It doesn't mean that you cannot function properly that day, because I find it very detrimental, because it's something that, oh, I didn't have enough sleep. But maybe check with yourself first, like how are you feeling? And as you said, also be gentle with yourself and don't, you know, already say, okay, oh, I didn't sleep, I'm too stressed. And then, like, I feel that the sleep is so fundamental to our well-being. And it's so, like, we know we can't function. Like, if you don't sleep, there were some studies done in the past that if you just don't sleep, some very, very bad things happen to you. Like, we need to sleep, we need to dream to function. So, but also at the same time to know that I think this part of being very adaptable and being human, and our bodies also being very smart, that they are taking from different resources also. And like this trust also that we can have to ourselves that, okay, maybe I'm going through something very complicated now, and, you know, I'm not getting the full amount of sleep and I'm very stressed, but like I can recover. This trust in ourselves, you know, in our bodies, in our organism, that it will, like, that the default is that it wants to go toward healing and toward wholeness, right? Like I had this conversation with the other day with Yael Schiller, and she wrote in her book, something that really stuck with me was that we are wired for healing. We are wired for wholeness. And it's really stayed with me, because when we struggle and when we went over trauma, we have insomnia, like things, a lot of different things can happen to us. We may feel so powerless, we may feel like, oh, this will stay forever. Maybe for someone that is dealing with insomnia for years, I know some people like that, and they feel like there's no hope. Mm-hmm. But to remember that we are, like, everything in our body, every cell in our body wants for us to be well, to be healthy, to regenerate. So to remember that, I feel it can also be very helpful to you. Do you also work with the beliefs when you work with your clients? Like, how do you find this also important part of changing this sleep disturbances or problems?
Yeah. So depending on, again, if that is the root cause maybe of their sleep problems, yes, I work around that. And what I find really helpful in that situation is providing a little bit of education around sleep to these people, you know, talking about, this is what I mentioned about sleep types and sleep stages. And also, yes, so one of the things that I talk about is that we naturally wake up, yes, in the middle of the night a few times a night. For people who, yes, who suffer from or experience crisis, they will become fully awake at that point. But lucky ones, yes, won't remember those awakenings. But yes, it is normal to wake. But if the person doesn't know about the architecture of sleep, they might feel, okay, this is happening only to me. I am the only one who experiences that. So my sleep, it must be so, you know, disrupted. And yeah, so actually those ways of thinking, those beliefs can be, like I said, fueling further our, if we've got any sleep difficulties. Another thing is that it's normal to need some time to fall asleep. Yes, 15 minutes, it's normal. It's that our body needs to obviously further slow down and our mind. Sometimes falling asleep within seconds, it's not the symptom of a good sleep. It might be that we are very exhausted. Yes, we're so tired. We are sleep deprived, and then we fall asleep. So educating, yes, around sleep architecture, for example, and then kind of restructuring the way of our thinking, with finding maybe thoughts that, or examples from our life that doesn't prove, yes, our certain thoughts. For example, I need to sleep 8 hours, otherwise I will have really, you know, a difficult day. Yes. So, but then probably there was time when you had less than 8 hours and you managed okay. Yes. You might even had a job interview and maybe you got the job, and actually this is a real scenario.
Is that it was your case or was one of your clients?
My case.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Say to challenge the beliefs, right? Around sleep, around dreaming, around nightmares. In general, I think it's very good quality and very good exercise for us to do on various topics in life.
Absolutely.
But with sleep, it's so important because we program ourselves. Like, this is already scientifically proven that what we repeat ourselves, we believe it. And what we believe happens to us many times because we program ourselves for that. So yes, as you said, maybe you went to a party and you had amazing time and then you slept 3 hours and you went to work and you were fine. And that time it was fine. I feel this also what happened to a lot of people from that I spoke to, some family members that can sleep, is that this ruminating in their head, right? Mm-hmm. When they lie in bed and they are already managing all the bad things that are going to happen, because first they cannot fall asleep and then they're going to wake up tired and then they're going to be bad at their job and stuff. If someone comes to you and say, oh, I lie in bed and I'm just thinking about all the terrible things and about how I'm failing, and how a person can maybe change this self-talk, that it's so detrimental. But sometimes we can't help it. This is what we do when we go to bed, mm-hmm. right? Many times, or we go over all the stuff that didn't go well in our life or in our day, or we are like imagining, especially if we're living some stressful times, like let's say there's no things. Cheerful things to look forward to. Maybe we're dragging the next day because of the circumstances. And this definitely doesn't help us to fall asleep. So what would you say to a person that is just, you know, lie there and this is what happens in their head?
Mm-hmm. So I would like to first of all prevent that. Yes. And doing some things that can help during the day, not just, you know, when we are in bed. So it could be writing things down during the day, like journaling, yes, mm-hmm. Expressing our thoughts. If we cannot talk to another person, yes, expressing them and writing them on the paper. So it might be things that you have done today, you felt in a certain way towards that, or things that you need to do maybe tomorrow, this week, or this month. So it's kind of those thoughts and things will be addressed during the day. Yes. What else? But if you are struggling in the middle of the night, I sometimes, you know, suggest getting up, yes, and kind of, or sitting up and kind of see how that feels, yes, mm-hmm. maybe going to not switching, ideally not switching lights on. Yes, but also you need to be careful.
Yes.
Get out of your bed and don't stay too much in your bed, you know, turning from side to side in those thoughts. Like maybe go to the bathroom, toilet, and maybe drink a sip of water. Sometimes reading a book, trying to avoid obviously electronic devices, checking the time, how long you have been awake, counting how much I've got, you know, till a morning alarm goes off. And yes, so just interrupting kind of that, interfering that threat of thoughts. Yes, but also you can, at this point, you can check in with your breathing. There are again lots of breathing techniques you can use, and again longer exhalation. So again, will help us to feel a little bit more calmer.
Thank you. It's, as you said, very important to try not to get to the point that it's happening to you. But if it's already happening to you, so to get out of the situation, not to stay and not to check the phone and the time. And yeah, I think for me, even very something that I would like to erase from my phone is that when I set an alarm, it shows me how many hours I have till the alarm goes. And I really don't like that.
Okay.
Like, this is something there, because this is what you just said, like counting the hours. And again, I'm not having personally problems with sleep, but I don't like to see that, for example, it says, oh, it's in 6 hours, it's going to ring, mm-hmm. right? Because I'm not calculating this when I go to sleep, but then I see it on my phone and it says like 6 hours till whatever, 8 a.m. or... And I really don't like that. It's something that works in my, you know, in my subconscious mind, I think. And it's already making me stressed. It's seeing 6 hours till waking up. But yeah. And one more thing I would like to ask you, it's about the medication. Uh-huh. Because nowadays I feel that we try to solve many problems the quickest way we can. And not coming from place of judgment, because I can only... imagine how terrible it must be not being able to get sleep, because this is, again, I can't imagine like functioning after not being able to sleep for a long period of time properly. But at the same time, I believe that many times, unfortunately, medications, sleeping pills, they are just covering the real symptoms, the roots. This is what we spoke today. And so it's like just masking. It won't heal us. It won't really help us in the long run. This is my personal opinion. So I would like to ask you, in your practice, in your experience, what would you say about taking sleeping pills? Is it, you know, what's your take on that?
Yeah. So thank you for that question. I think it's very important. But like you said, I can, you know, again, understand and empathize with people who suffer from sleep deficiency and impact of this on their daily functioning. It can feel like a torture. It can feel like a torture when you don't have enough sleep. Sleep is your basic, the most fundamental need, yes, that you need to fulfill. And yes, this is what my clients say to me. I feel like I am being tortured. So yes, well, I can understand it will be very tempting in those situations to reach for pills. But there are a few buts. Yes, one of the reasons that I would be cautious, because sleeping medications, they don't go into root causes. They are like a kind of plaster or a bandage. Yes, so it's not a cure, it's like a kind of coverage, yes, for those underlying issues. So that's one of the reasons. Another thing is that we build our tolerance to sleeping pills quite quickly. So what it means that we, after a short time, we will need a higher dosage to achieve those effects that we got at the beginning by using them. So this is our physiological kind of response, but there will be also psychological response. We might create certain habits around the most certain, again, beliefs, I cannot sleep without them. Yes, without them, I wouldn't be able to sleep at all. Yes, or even if I'm thinking of coming off them, yes, I am so scared, it won't work. So that is kind of this reason. And also they've got side mm-hmm. effects that we will feel on the next day. Like, for example, grogginess, confusion, loss of memory, but also it will affect our balance. So our kind of movement, that can be even more detrimental to even older people if they've got a loose balance, if they've got an accident. The outcome of this might be more serious than maybe for younger people. Yes, also research says that people who take sleeping medications, they tend to, the risk of like motor or vehicle accidents is greater. Yes.
Oh, that's very dangerous. Yeah.
Yeah. Another thing is that they might help us to fall asleep a little bit easier, or to not to wake up as frequently when we take them. But the quality of sleep that we mentioned before, it won't be the same as gained from our natural sleep. Yes, so REM sleep and deep or slow wave sleep can be kind of shortened by taking medication. So that's why even if we take medication, if we fall asleep, if we don't wake up as frequently, we still might wake up feeling unrefreshed. Yeah. So it would be, if medications are being used, it would be only short-term maybe solution, with obviously consultation with your doctor, because the benefits are, or maybe the, actually the side effects are greater than benefits. Yes, but I must also kind of stress that people who are our listeners, if at the moment they are taking medications and thinking about maybe changing, coming off them, they, to do it safely, they need to discuss it with their medical doctor. Yes, yeah? So it's,
of course, beforehand. I believe, like with every medication that we're taking on the daily base, it's, we need to be very responsible and not just, you know, cut, just stop yeah. taking something. But what you said, it seems like it's, the sleeping pills also come with a quite high price. And again, of course, everyone needs to decide for themselves, and everyone's circumstances are different. But maybe what I would like the message to be from our talk today is that there are other ways to improve the sleep. And you can also wind off the pills, and you can get the help of a sleep coach, because maybe regular therapists or your family doctor, they don't have so much knowledge and they don't have so many resources, and it's okay because this is not their specialty, right? So maybe looking for help in the right places, right? And trying to also believe that it is possible to get better sleep. I'm not saying maybe, as you said, it can take time. It can maybe not be perfect sleep, you know, it may not be the sleep that we used to have, but it can be better sleep, right? There's always something that we can do to have better sleep. And it's very important to, for everyone who's listening, to know that. So Alicia, would you like to share with anyone who would like to know more about you, about what you do, your offering, how can you support, where they can find the information about you?
Okay, so yes, the most information your listeners can find about me is on my website, and my place, it is called Sleep Shield. It is in two language versions, in English and Polish. So, yes, so people speaking with both languages can reach. And yes, so I've got some information about me, about how I work with people, usually on a one-to-one basis. but I offered as well some workshops in the past. At the moment, they were in Polish, but yes, there will be more, but mainly it is one-to-one work. And yes, it's through my Instagram and through my Facebook, so social media.
Great. So I'm going to attach all the links to the show notes. I think it's really, really important and also really fascinating for me to know that there are people that this is exactly what they do. They help other people sleep better. I love it. And I want to spread this word with everyone. And again, if you're struggling with sleep, remember that there are a lot of things that you can do during the day. As Alicia mentioned, that there are a lot of ways to set yourself up for better sleep and not to wait till the moment that you get yourself under the the blanket and then what, right? Mm-hmm. So I think this is one of the big takes of this conversation. And thank you, Alicia. Thank you for coming, for sharing your knowledge, your expertise, your compassion toward people that have problems with sleep. It's very important. And everyone who would like to check out what Alicia does, you can find all this information in the description of this conversation.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
And we wish everyone a good, peaceful, long enough sleep.
Good quality sleep.
Good quality sleep.
Thank you.
I really hope that you enjoyed this show. If you did, please consider giving it a like and maybe leaving a review. And most importantly, feel free to share it with your family and friends. For more information about my work and projects, you can check out my website, www.bluelotusqueendom.com.